Good morning.
Good morning.
This morning's scripture is taken from the book of Mark, chapter 13, verses 31 through 35. Then his mother and his brothers came, and standing outside, they sent to him and called him. A crowd was sitting around him, and they said to him, "Your mother and your brothers are outside asking for you." And he replied, "Who are my mother and my brothers?" And looking at those who sat around him, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and sister and mother." This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I guess this is like the morning after, right? Because you all have this massive craft fair yesterday. It sounds like it was a great success. Congratulations for that. But folks must be a little tired today. It's good to see your faces and mostly smiles around the congregation. I need to confess, I love this text and I hate this text. It's a beautiful text, and it reminds us we're one big happy family, kind of happy. We're one big family in Jesus Christ. And I'm grateful to the session and to Pastor Moreland for the invitation to be with you and to think about this text together. Because at least in the world that I grew up in, I shouldn't ever confess from the pulpit that I'm from Dallas, Texas. I understand it's not really popular in Pittsburgh to admit that. But if you'll forgive me for that. I remember growing up in Dallas. I grew up in a neighborhood where everybody knew each other. We all would, you know, kids would come out in the evening and play and kick the can all night long until it got too dark to see. But all around us, even in those days, I remember that I was being formed by the culture around me. Not only my parents' culture and our community's culture, but the surrounding culture of this world. I remember that I was very aware of property lines as a kid. Because when you cross the line from our front yard to Mr. Ashburn's front yard, he came out in a snap and yelled at you. I just knew, and it was an invisible line, but we all knew where it was. We learned early on to respect property lines. We learned to respect national borders that separate the us from the them. We've learned to respect the color line, at least in the Dallas, Texas that I grew up in. There was a color line that some realtors drew around neighborhoods to protect them from those other people out there. Ruth and I, in our work, we lived for 10 years in Peru and for 5 years in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And in some cultures, there are bloodlines that in many places separate humanity into categories that the moment you're born determine your profession and maybe even your marriage partner. We, as kids, we learn how to respect those lines. Even though we don't know exactly where they stand, we know to respect them. Well, for many years, Ruth and I had the opportunity to work in Peru as missionaries of the Presbyterian Church, USA. We worked primarily among indigenous folks in Peru, Quechua speakers, who had a deep understanding of the nuance of community, that which draws us together, and those things that cause us to be separated one from another. In the part of the Andes where we were working, it's considered presumptuous or even brash for a young person to speak too often in the first person singular, I. To talk about me or I too often makes you sound like you know it all, right? They say that we, that first person plural, we, in English we only have one word, right? We. There's a sense that you're speaking much more honestly because Quechua-speaking mothers will say to their kids, "What do you know that has not been given to you to know by your family, your community, and your ancestors?" There's a sense that we may say that we have something new, but there's nothing new under the sun, right? We're just sort of reincorporating ideas from our ancestors in many ways. But the ways that you think and speak inform the ways that I think and speak. We're just woven together in that way. In fact, so sensitive is the Quechua-speaking person to the nuance of community that in English, though it's a rich language to be sure, we only have one word for that first person singular, the first person plural pronoun, we. But in Quechua, there are two words. And if you'll indulge me, I'll teach you a couple of Quechua words. There's the word ñohaku. Can you say that with me? Nyohaku. Nyohaku is the exclusive we. It's when I say, Cliff, let's go get some Mexican food, and we leave the rest of y'all hanging, right? So I've created a kind of community, haven't I? It's Cliff and me, but it's an exclusive community. It's kind of like a fraternity or a country club. It's we're who we are because you're not, right? That's the exclusive we. That's Nyohaku. But there's another word in Quechua. It's called Nyohanchik. Can you say that with me? Nyohanchik. Nyohanchik is the inclusive we. It's when Jesus speaks to the disciples, but the way he speaks includes everybody. The kids who are just outside the window listening in, the people, the despised publican or the sinners or the tax collectors or the prostitutes. All those folks are included in what I guess I'd say in my native Texan, the divine y'all come. Everybody's welcome. Doesn't matter what you've done, doesn't matter what you look like, doesn't matter how you smell, everybody's welcome. Now there's a challenge to us Christians for that, because we're sitting next to people whose smell we don't like. We're sitting next to people who we don't always like. We don't like the looks of them. We don't like the way they talk. The way they talk about God or don't talk about God just bothers us. And yet there they are in this same circle with us. And we're called to go out and change the world with them. Can you imagine what a challenge it is to us? Yet one of the primary tasks of the mission of Jesus Christ is to erase those lines of exclusion, that line that separated Mr. Washburn's yard from ours, and allow all God's children to play together out in the front lawn. One of the primary tasks of Jesus' mission was to redraw the world, erasing those lines of exclusion and drawing a big circle that included everybody. It's a strange situation. If you take a look around you, and you'll see people who you like and maybe some others as well, right? That's just the stuff of being in a Christian community. But it makes for a big challenge for most of us. Ruth and I worked for about 10 years with a city high up in the Andes Mountains. It's about 12, almost 13,000 feet up in the Andes Mountains. We lived in Lima, Peru. We traveled 4 hours up into the mountains and spend a couple of days there each week. We were working with the Presbyterian Hunger Program of our denomination. And we worked for 5 years with a group of mothers and fathers and teachers and many, many children, both Protestant and Catholic, who were challenged and struggling with the very high lead levels in the community where they lived. It's a metal smelting plant. It was high up in the mountains and it's in a valley, so all the toxic emissions that go up through the stacks into the valley stay in the valley. It's a great employer. You won't find a person in the city who wanted the plant closed. Everybody wanted it to continue. There were no rabble-rousers in this town. Everybody wanted their main source of income to continue. But they wanted the lead levels to drop because it was had become very, very dangerous for kids. In fact, some scientists came and did some studies of the city, and the city, which is called La Oroya, is one of the world's most polluted places. Every day, 1,000 tons of lead, arsenic, cadmium, and sulfur dioxide were emitted over the city. And in a city with 11,000 kids, 97.2% of the children had lead poisoning. Two-thirds of them had it so bad that if they'd been your kids, they would have been hospitalized immediately if they had lived in the United States. The lead levels were so high that each child was losing between 1 and 3 IQ points every year that they lived in the city. We'll do the math for your kids or grandkids. Now, all of us think that our kids are more than average. They're better than average, right? But if a kid has 100 points, just do the math. A 10-year-old could lose up to a third of the intelligence that God had given them at birth. And nobody has the right to take a child's intelligence away. So in that very complicated situation, nobody wanted the plant closed, but everybody wanted that place to be healthier. In that complicated place, I watched a young woman by the name of Yolanda Zurita. She was a Catholic lay worker. She worked tirelessly for the Catholic parish and cared for people, helped people get medical attention, particularly for the children who were having some difficulties. Now, Yolanda was never and still is not a biological mother in the scientific term, the scientific meaning of the word. She's never born children. But Yolanda had this mother's hope that all children could enjoy God's grace and mercy. And so because she believed in Yohanchik, that all-inclusive we that draws us all together, Yolanda became mother to 11,000 kids in that city, and to my kids, who she hardly knew when we first went up there, but she met them and she grew to love them. She became mother to those kids. Heck, she'll be mother to your kids if you bring them by. She's just that kind of a person, right? She knew that love only multiplies when you share it. But because Yolanda had dared to follow Jesus Christ to redraw the world in La Arroya, some amazing things have happened in that community. It started out in the company, it was a U.S. company, the Doe Run Company of St. Louis, Missouri. It used to describe Yolanda and a group of us who supported this small social movement, you could call it, a group of folks who were asking for cleaner health conditions. They called us the seven cats out on the fence, right? We just made a lot of noise. But over time, we shared this story with journalists and some people from about 500 U.S. newspapers, CNN, National Public Radio, the New York Times. Lots of folks were reporting on it, Peruvian newspapers and television as well. News of this ongoing health crisis spread quickly, and it was so outrageous, the levels of lead, it became a deep concern to people all over the world, and particularly in the Congress in Lima. But it all began because Yolanda had dared to respond to Christ's call to mission, to redraw the lines that exclude some kids and redraw a circle that includes all of God's children, even you and me. I remember when a group of pastors, we went up from Lima up to La Arroya, about a four-hour drive. We got there and we were watching some kids, playing with some kids in a church basement. It was the Catholic parish. And as we spent some time there, one of the pastors got a sense. Now, these are kids who have been severely lead poisoned. So you see some deformities in some of their longer bones, legs and arms. You see some changes in the shape of the skull. And you get a sense there's a dullness to the kids. There's just, they don't have the mental acuity that most children at that age would have. And so it began to dawn on us as we watched these kids play. One of the pastors said, "Brothers, can you imagine if these were your kids?" Yolanda didn't miss a beat. She said, "But Pastor, these are your kids. All of these children are God's children, and they belong to be inside this circle with the people of God." And Jesus invites us to draw that line in a broad way, including all of God's children in the circle of God's love and care. Because if the great commandment calls us to love our neighbors as ourselves, then we must love our neighbors' children even as we love our own, whether they're documented or not, whether they're on this side of the border or that side. Whoever's children they are, they're our children as well. And this is the heart of mission. The Apostle James writes in his epistle, "The essence of religion is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and keep oneself unstained by the world." If we boil it all down, it's how we care for our neighbors, the ones we love, to be sure, but also those whom we don't love. This is the essence. Well, I remember a lesson that I got in this. This area of Peru that we worked in had been hard hit by the war between the Shining Path Liberation Army and the government of Peru, the army. And in that war, there were no good guys or bad guys. Both sides had done horrendous abuses of human rights. People had their loved ones killed or disappeared in the violence of those years. There was such fear in the communities, and we worked very closely with a community called the Santa Barbara community, the site of a colonial mine, a mercury mine that they used to help process silver in that area. It's a very mining, highly industrialized area for mining. In those years, though, I was traveling with a pastor by the name of David Pumacawa. He's a Presbyterian pastor who pastors the New Jerusalem Presbyterian Church in the town of Santa Barbara up in the Andes Mountains. As we were approaching the church, it was a Sunday evening, and in Peru, most Presbyterians worship on Sunday evenings, because they'll work oftentimes all day during Sunday. And so in the evening, people were gathering together. It was about 7 o'clock. And as we're going up the hill to his church, I knew that this was a church that had been racked by the devastation of broken relationships. Because in those years, the 11 years that the Shining Path Liberation Army had been very close by in that community, and they'd come in at night sometimes, in the middle of the night, they'd pick up certain men in the community, or certain women, and they'd disappear them, or they'd kill them before the eyes of their community. Then 3 days later, 4 days later, the government would come in and do the same thing. Well, to stay alive, to survive in those years, sometimes you would give information, true or false, about a neighbor. And maybe I'd given up information about Cliff's uncle, and Cliff's uncle had been disappeared, never to be seen again. Well, these are fracture lines in a community that don't heal easily. And I was in that community 7 years after the end of the violence. And as I walked into that community, you could feel there was a lot of people in that congregation that weren't speaking to each other. There was silence among them. They were there to worship God, but they didn't want to touch the folks around them. This was the fractured community of Santa Barbara in those years. And as we go in, Pastor David says to me, "Hermano, ora conmigo que voy a hacer algo distinto hoy." He said, "Brother, pray with me, because I'm going to do something different today." Well, as we mentioned earlier this morning, Presbyterians don't like when you do anything different, right? And so I didn't know what was going to happen. Well, we walked into this church service, and it was kind of a wide open space, just like this. He put a Bible down in the center of the church. Well, everybody kind of looked at him strange. What's this pastor doing? They don't like new things, right, in Presbyterian churches around the world. So everybody was looking at him. He says, "Sisters and brothers, let's get together in a circle." So they all stood a little awkwardly, because they didn't want to be too close to their neighbor, right? As they're standing there, he says, "What's the only thing you have to do each day to follow Jesus Christ?" Well, Presbyterians all over the world hate test questions. So it was silence, right? None of the adults wanted to say something wrong. So we waited and in silence, and one of the teenagers, Maria Luisa, said, "Well, Pastor, just take a step." He said, "Let's do that." So we all took a step forward towards the scriptures in the center of the circle, and we got a little uncomfortably close to each other. And he says, "Take another step. Get closer to Jesus." So we all took another step, and now we're shoulder to shoulder, actually touching the person around us. And he said, "Sisters and brothers, every day, to follow Jesus Christ, you have to take a step closer to him, and necessarily you will get closer to your neighbor. The movement towards Jesus draws us closer to our neighbor. You can't help it." And we stood there for a moment, and it was silent. And Doña Marta, an older woman with long braids down her back, got tears in her eyes, crossed the circle, and went and embraced a man that she had not spoken to in 7 years, because he was the reason for her husband's death 7 years before. And it was like the spirit fell in that moment, and each person was enabled, not all, but most of the people in that room were able to forgive the person that they had been holding that grudge against for so many years. And it drew them together in a time of reconciliation and a renewal to God's mission in the world. That's my prayer for us as a church, as a denomination, and as the Church of Jesus Christ in this country, that we can have the courage to erase those lines that exclude some folks from others and redraw the world according to the mission of Jesus Christ that draws us all into one family, followers of the risen Lord. Amen.